Welcome back to the Illinois Agronomy Update. I'm your host, Troy Kazire, with Hertz Farm Management here in Geneseo, Illinois. And today we have Eric Snodgrass with us. Eric is a senior science fellow with Nutrien. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
And yeah, we appreciate you coming back. And I think a lot of folks who are listening are well aware of the weather reports that you do on a daily basis. I guess to start off with, before we get into the discussion here, Eric, why don't you take a couple of minutes here and just kind of tell folks about your background and kind of what your role is there with Nutrien.
Yeah, sure. So I'm one of those rare cases where you picked a major in college and stuck with it. So I did all my undergrad at Western Illinois University, then transferred to University of Illinois for graduate school, where I stayed on teaching courses for 16 years, actually. I was the director of their undergraduate program. Started a couple small companies along the way, both of which were acquired by Nutrien Ag Solutions back in 2018. And they hired me on to do weather analysis and forecasting for them, for their clients, for their whole business. And so I spend most of my time trying to understand how weather is going to impact production ag, not only here, but around the rest of the world.
Well, very good. And it's exactly that expertise we want to tap into today. And obviously, you know, we're looking at the calendar. Everybody's well aware we're starting to kind of sneak up on spring planting. And so I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about kind of what that weather outlook is for spring planting and kind of what you're seeing as we look at the models over the next month or so.
Yeah, the issue was that coming out of March, we saw just an incredibly active setup with a lot of the colder air that's due to just a tremendous amount of snowpack in the west, plus the behavior of the Pacific jet. It just keeps sending the flow down there into California. And what happens is that rounds the southern edge of the Rocky Mountains and then comes screaming across the Midwest. And so we've seen some sizable severe weather outbreaks, like the one we had on March 31st, where if you look back on that day, we're well over 900 reports of severe weather, including over 100 reports of tornadoes. And here we are, you know, we're talking here on the 3rd of April, but we've got another system coming through on the 4th of April that could come through and produce severe weather in almost the same places. So what is that doing? Well, a lot of damage and destruction, but it's also putting down some heavy rain in places. So we've seen the soil moisture recover, which is good, but it's at the expense of keeping us out of the field from doing a lot of prep work and getting things going. So what do we see? Well, it's good news to say that through the middle of the month, there's a bit of a pattern shift coming that's going to bring in a little bit more mild air, get those soil temperatures up. In fact, they might be knocking on the door of 50 degrees Fahrenheit at 4 inches a few times. But we have to be patient. Our normal last frost dates across the state of Illinois, especially central Illinois and north, you know, they're the middle to end of April. And therefore, we know that we can still have more colder air. And if we look out there, and your question was about what does the rest of this month look like, you know, if we return back into a pattern like we saw at the end of March, that means highly volatile temperature patterns. So in other words, big warm-ups ahead of the strong storms. Behind them, we have a bunch of colder air that settles in. And along the way, we tend to get a lot of precipitation. And everything I just said spells tighter windows, which means when the windows do open, we're going to have to just go after it and go quick and get a lot of work done as fast as we can. But as it stands, it looks to be a pretty volatile month of April, which is typical. We have volatile Aprils. And whenever those little windows do open up, if it's good, we go after it pretty quickly.
So now you mentioned, you know, obviously we are recharging a lot of that subsoil moisture, which was pretty sorely needed in a lot of places, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the soil moisture, I just think about this past weekend, we had at least 2 inches of rain here at my house. My front backyards were lakes, and here it is. I'm out here on Monday, and I can't even find a puddle, right? I mean, that's soaked right in. We've seen the U.S. Drought Monitor show us up to 86% drought coverage back in late November, early December. That number is now down to 50%. Most of the drought in the West has been relieved. We've had drought east of the Mississippi River relieved. The only place it's staying anchored is in the central and southern plains, and there's not a lot of hope for that region in the near term to bring them out of drought. So that's going to be something we'll contend with for the coming weeks and months, is that there is still drought west of us, pretty far to the west of us here, but it's there, and we need to know what that's going to mean possibly moving forward.
So with those rains, you know, that we're talking about here in the Midwest, and you know, you mentioned snowpack, of course, you know, in the Rockies, it's pretty significant, but correct me if I'm wrong, but there's pretty significant snowpack sort of in the upper plains, right? The upper Midwest and in some of those areas. As that starts to melt, are we concerned about flooding?
Absolutely. And more so than in past years. I mean, last year was a big prevented plant year because not because of the snow, but because of just heavy spring rains in May and June in the Northern Plains. This year, it doesn't need to snow in May or excuse me, it doesn't need to rain in April or rain in May for the Northern Plains to have flooding problems because there's between 2 and 12 inches of liquid in the snow that's there. And here we are in the first week of April, and they're expecting from Wyoming through South Dakota, the Red River Valley of the North, that whole corridor is going to pick up another 10 to 20 inches of snow, which is going to keep them cold, and it's going to keep them extremely wet in terms of the total amount of water that's there. So this is going to be an issue. Now, I really could not speculate on how much prevented plant we're going to have at this point. What I do know is that we're probably talking about 30 to 45 days of flood risk and very low amount of field work getting done. And remember, 45 days from now puts us in the middle of May. So I'm quite concerned about the Northern Plains and Upper Midwest. And if you think about the headwaters of the Mississippi River, which of course runs along the western side of our state here, we will likely have a lot of flooding on that river as that snow melts and comes down, combined with normal spring rains. So it certainly is going to be a year where we're concerned about those things. And I think it's going to be something that will be talked about for at least another month, month and a half.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. So before we started recording here, Eric, you and I were talking, and you mentioned El Nino. So what, you know, I that always seems to play into the patterns that we see this time of year. And I think a lot of people might want to get a little bit of refresher on what El Nino actually means and what's it looking like for this year.
Yeah, I can understand why people want the refresher because we've been in 3 years, excuse me, of La Nina. So this is the big idea. We're watching the trade wind pattern, which runs along the equator. Whenever there is a La Nina, those trade winds are fast. There's a bunch of upwelling of cold water, and the central equatorial Pacific looks cold. What it tends to do is rob momentum from the jet stream winds, which are over us, which tends to produce more chances of drought development, high pressure, and a lack of good moisture return. It's not a guarantee, but that's what history would tell us. On the flip side of that, if you have an El Nino, the trade winds back off. The warm water sloshes back across the equatorial Pacific, and now all of a sudden the momentum is gained in the jet stream, which tends to produce better chances of having more routine weather systems throughout our growing season, which means less chance of developing drought. Again, not a guarantee, but we like El Nino events in the Midwest because historically they're correlated with less risk of heat and better chances of more rain throughout our growing season. I went back and looked all the way back to 1970, and I found that from 1970 to last year, we've had 17 different El Nino events in that 52-year time period. And over that time period, 14 of those 17 events produced near average to above average yields. Only 3 of the years were below trend on the USDA's NAS data for soybean and corn yields. So it's extremely important that we understand that El Nino gives us a better chance at having a bigger crop. But at the same time, remember, El Nino is just one of many factors we have to pay attention to that could ultimately determine the success of a growing season. So it's good news, but we're cautiously optimistic. That's the phrase.
Sure. Okay. Now, how are things, you know, now that we kind of have a picture of what the Midwest we think is sort of looking like over the next month, how are things shaping up in South America?
Yeah. So first crop of soybeans, we know in Brazil was huge. They increased acreage by almost 7 million acres this year. And then they didn't really have any significant weather problems. In fact, you could say most of Brazil saw normal to above normal rains. They actually pushed the crop and kept it green too long. So the crop was actually late in being harvested, but it was a big crop. So that meant the Safrina crop went in a bit late, which is the second crop or small crop, although it's not small anymore. I mean, it's actually a huge second crop, and it's mostly corn. And it went in. And now it's getting a good drink of water, and which means the second crop of corn is probably going to be a pretty large one. But the crop calendar is a bit off in South America because of some of those delays due to some heavy rains late. Now, where there's problems is down in Rio Grande do Sul. That's the southern end of Brazil. It's the Rio Grande of the South. And you go from there into Uruguay, into northern Argentina, along the Paraná River Basin. And we have another place down there that has had significant drought problems. In fact, you've heard a lot about the Argentinian drought. It's going on 4 months long right now. Remember, in the middle of it, they had temperatures that were routinely above 100 Fahrenheit, like back in January and February. And then they had, on February 18th, a patchy frost that hit very limited locations, but there was still patchy frost, followed the week later with temperatures back up in the low 100s. The drought was extensive. Bunch of rain just fell back in mid-March and didn't matter. Some places got 10 inches of rain, and all it did was make the problems worse. So as good as Brazil has been, Argentina has had the opposite end of that distribution, and they're having a really rough year. So we are expecting a big safrinha crop coming out of Brazil. We know the soybean crop is quite large. And that's going to be really key in determining the way the market's going to start here in North America going into our growing season.
Well, interesting. I appreciate you really, really kind of painted the picture for us. Sounds like, yeah, we're anticipating maybe some narrow windows. Hopefully we're able to get in the fields and get things done when the time comes. Is there anything else that we've missed here, Eric?
No, I think you've hit all the main highlights, and we'll look for some positivity in this longer term. But right now, things just feel a bit rough as we kind of march our way through April here.
So, what? Just out of curiosity, this doesn't necessarily apply to us here in the Midwest, but you know, we talked early on about all those snowpacks, and of course, the Rockies just tremendous snowpack this year. Do you have a sense of what that's going to mean for the reservoirs, and particularly like Lake Mead and some of the reservoirs that have really been low out there?
Yeah, I mean, right now the upper Colorado Basin has between 140 and 150% of normal snowpack on it. So that water is going to go down through the Colorado River and help to recharge Lake Mead and Lake Powell. There is actually the chance this year that we might even allow the Grand Canyon to flood a little bit, which would be very important to the ecosystem there. And we might even see some of that water, you know, from the Rocky Mountains go through the Colorado River, making all the way to the Pacific, which is something that hasn't happened in a long time. But the biggest snowpack is actually in California, and the reservoirs throughout California right now are well above their historical averages. There are some places in the Sierra Nevada mountains that have over 60 feet of snowpack. There's 100 to 110 inches of liquid in that snow, which means the flooding problems in California are going to continue going into spring. But it's an important reminder that given that California's got 40 million people and leads the nation in the production of over 40 different fruits and vegetables, that California, you know, will consume a lot of the water they're storing right now, meaning that they need to have good snowpack next winter too to keep those reservoirs at a healthy level. And that's just the way it is in California. Each winter just buys another year's worth of water. It doesn't buy 10 years worth of water, it just buys another year's worth of water. So we got to keep a close eye out on the West and what this means going forward. But right now, even though they're sick of snow and there's a major flood threat, we can see the positive side of it by saying we've reduced drought in that area significantly and eliminated it in some parts of the West.
Well, fascinating. It's going to be interesting to see all that play out as we move towards the next couple of months here. Well, Eric Snodgrass, Senior Science Fellow with Nutrien. Really appreciate your time today, Eric.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me on again.
All right, absolutely. And look forward to talking to you again. We'll see how the weather plays out the rest of the season. So thanks again to Eric, and thanks to everyone for listening. And we'll see you next time on the next episode of the Illinois Agronomy Update. Thank you.